changed our ways in the logging industry, so it's time the industry of petroleum institute support changes its ways.
Well, that's actually kind of an interesting challenge. This is one of the things I've talked about with a lot of people who are dealing with this influx of proposals to turn this region into a fossil fuel hub, that we're used to resource extraction industries like mining to some degree, not so much around here, but certainly in the eastern and southern parts of the region, and certainly logging. But what would you say is the difference between logging, even industrial scale logging, and what happens when you bring in fossil fuel projects like this refinery?
Well, logging has changed a lot. It was very labor intensive. Now it's much more mechanized, but it's done in an ecologically, environmentally responsible manner. We leave streams. We appreciate the fact most loggers and people definitely in Longview, Kelso, Cowlitz County, Kalama, Woodland are appreciate the outdoors. They love fishing, hunting, etc. But logging is one thing, is a necessity. It's renewable. It is sustainable. We just have to do a little bit better on our harvesting methods. We can always improve. But with something with fossil fuel, it's not, particularly in this methanol refinery, as long as we're being specific, is totally not sustainable, not renewable. It's using fracked nat gas, which we've seen now is destroying water aquifers, as well as causing earthquakes, man-made earthquakes in certain areas. Oklahoma is a good example. So this is a one-way street. It extracts, uses, destroys, and then hangs around and causes other problems. The amount of carbon, CO2, being put into the air here is, as far as I recall, I think it's 1.4 to 1.5 million tons per year. There's going to be a huge amount of particulate matter in the vapor plume, and as well as then they're going to, they've changed their methodology from the original DEIS application into a newer technology, which means the state has entertained, along with the Port of Kalama, has entertained an open contract, which is really a strange way to do business. You usually don't have blanks in something to have the future employer tell you what they want to do after they get the permits and change their ways.
If you just
it's pretty much a one-way street on petroleum products, on fossil fuel. We got to change our ways. We're smarter than that as a species.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning about the Kalama, or the proposed Kalama methanol refinery that would be the world's largest methanol refinery that's backed by the Chinese government. And my guests are Jasmine Zimmersaki, who is a senior organizer with Columbia Riverkeeper and who's been the kind of point person with Columbia Riverkeeper on organizing to stop the refinery. And we're also joined by local community activist Gary Walls. Gary, do you actually live in Kalama, or are you still living in Kelso?
No, I'm a native of Kelso. I've resided here in Kalama longer than residing in Kelso. I've been here over 42 years. I live out in the country on top of 1,600 feet, so I'm looking about 10 inches of snow, beautiful blue skies, but it wouldn't be that way. I have a feeling my snow would be a little charcoal gray should the wind blow the wrong way if this thing goes through. So I'm a familiar face in Kalama, been here a long, long time, and quite familiar with most of the people in town.
So, Jasmine, I want to know, how did you hook up with Gary, and how did you actually get involved in the first place in kind of spearheading this struggle on behalf of Columbia Riverkeeper?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, as Gary mentioned, you know, Kalama is you know, joins two other communities in Southwest Washington in facing, you know, in fighting what would be, you know, the largest in their sort of category of fossil fuel export terminals. Just to the north of Kalama is Longview, a proposed coal export terminal that would be the largest in North America. Just south of Kalama is the Port of Vancouver, where the Tesoro Savage oil terminal would be the largest oil terminal in North America. And, you know, situated right in between that is the town of Kalama. And so Gary has been an amazing activist in those other communities, helping those communities fight massive pollution and unsustainable fossil fuel development, and now is seeing that, you know, in his own town. And I think that's one of the more heartening aspects to come out of, you know, fighting these massive industries who use dirty tactics, who have dirty commodities, is to see the different communities come together and help one another with their individual fights, because no one town, can really, especially smaller towns, cannot, fight these massive projects alone. It takes a little bit of help from all the neighboring communities.
Well, when I first talked to people in Columbia Riverkeeper about the Kalama methanol refinery, and this was well over a year ago, I got the concern that there was not a lot of attention being focused on it, and that there was not a lot of, didn't seem to be a lot of power within the community to actually stop it. And people were really feeling particularly worried about possibilities of having eminent domain used against them. And it seems that, have things shifted? Are you starting to feel now that there's more empowerment and there's more community cohesion in fighting this?
Maybe I'll let Gary answer that one.
What do you say, Gary?
You guys throw me the curve, huh? Okay. Well, actually, there's a little frustration in the number of activists. We have grown steadily. We are getting more and more support here in Kalama specifically. We do meet on the first Tuesday of every month downtown Kalama, and we have grown from a handful of 6 to 8 to 30 that attend regularly, which is pretty good in a small town that only has maybe 2,000, 2,500 people total. And that doesn't sound like much, but it really is, because out of that 30, all of their friends come help out, sign up, are getting more educated. So it's more of a process of countering NWIWs, and I have to say the word propaganda, because they're not representing the facts truthfully.
Well, let's actually break that down a bit. So what are they saying, and what is really behind what they're saying?
Well, here, for an example, they are having people obtain signatures throughout Southwest Washington, particularly, I'm going to use the example Walmart's, because there's one in Woodland, in which we had an opportunity for the last 3 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday of last week, to gather signatures and disseminate information, have conversations with people. Well, some of the people that I had sign up against the methanol refinery had also been there during the prior week when NWIW signature gatherers, paid signature gatherers, were there, and they were telling people that they were gathering signatures to save 1,000 jobs. Well, in reality, those 1,000 jobs, as far as I can ascertain, and according to the NWIW website, are designed to end their construction type of jobs. They're specifically trained specialty types of contractors, so they're coming out of Texas. So those 1,000 to 3,000 jobs they tout during construction period only designed to last 1 to 3 months, depending upon the phase of construction and need of crew. So there's really not 1,000 jobs out there. NWIW is telling people those are local jobs, and again, those are not local jobs. Those are itinerant construction crews that they don't care. They come and go. They go to the job. So that's a real bad example. And I've had people say that, well, they signed that 1,000 job save them for the governor of Washington. And then they talked to us and said, well, that's not what they told us. So I suggest to people they go to Clean Air Kalama or Columbia Riverkeeper's websites, and then maybe take a look at NWIW and see the difference between truth at Columbia Riverkeeper, Kalama Clean Air, and then what NWIW says. It's all a spin. The head of the spearhead of this is a gentleman, I use that term loosely, named V. Godley, and his goal is to retire in 2 years off of this construction job that he's spearheading for the Academy of Sciences out of the Communist Chinese government. So there's multiple aspects that aren't known to the general public until they really dig deep and open their ears beyond jobs and start finding out the facts. Another example is multiple people. Kalama is being developed into a very beautiful view city, a nice bedroom community, and that's what it has to offer, beautiful views of the Columbia River Valley. And right now there are people that I spoke with when I was gathering signatures at the Woodland Walmart on Thursday that had moved into Kalama but weren't informed that there were potential problems or a situation coming up for this methanol plant. So they had million-dollar contracts. They are very nice homes, million-dollar contracts and property that they are not. They're going to lose value on. According to a study done in Tacoma relative to this methanol proposal, they found in Tacoma that it would lose up to 11% of property value, and it also affects negatively birth weights of newborn children. So the people in Tacoma stood up and says neither of those are healthy for our community, and that kind of information is being held back from the community and spun over by Mr. V. Godley, whose degree is in marketing. He has no experience in any petroleum anything. He has a track record, if you go look at the port of Pocatello, Idaho, that he set up a similar type of a job site, went bankrupt on it. The general contractor, which happens to be out of Longview, Washington, J.H. Kelly, got left holding the bag. They turned around, owned the facility they'd just constructed, along with all kinds of other financial motivations and incentives, and ended up scrapping it, selling it to a company from India, who now owns the rights to the property at the port of Pocatello, Idaho. So that's the same kind of track record that I feel is going to be part of Kalama's legacy if this proposal goes through. And that is a total disaster for everybody.
Now, Jasmine, another thing that we've talked about is the greenwashing involved with this, because it seems that you can't sell a fossil fuel proposal anymore in the Northwest by touting it as a dirty project. You have to somehow mold it to fit into the image of the Northwest as being a green region. So how is that playing out here with the Kalama refinery?
Right. It's absolutely mind-boggling the extent of the greenwashing that's happening in Kalama. As Gary alluded to, this company is very fine. It's completely comfortable obfuscating the facts. They're making it difficult to figure out exactly what's going on with their project. And one of the ways that they do it with the public is they have their logo is a really, a happy, smiling planet Earth with sort of a tree mohawk and the text "Citizens for a Green Economy." And so if you are someone who, wants to see a green economy, you would probably at first glance you'll be drawn to a company that is promoting themselves with this logo, "Citizens for a Green Economy." But there's no solar. There's no solar panel. There's no wind technology. This is not green technology. This is the largest methanol refinery in the world, proposed in Kalama, Washington, and they're using this "Citizens for a Green Economy" marketing scheme to confuse people, because they know that people want green solutions. They know that people support the green economy. They know that people want to reduce their carbon footprint and have green jobs that are more sustainable and aren't rooted in this boom-bust cycle of resource extraction. Those are all things that they know that we want. And instead of actually giving us that, they're giving us that marketing and then actually promoting, what is an incredibly dangerous and dirty fossil fuel export terminal that is really no different than all these other facilities we've seen along the Columbia River.
So what is methanol exactly?
Sure. So so in this case, they are making methanol from natural gas. So they would bring in about 320 million cubic feet a day of natural gas. To put that into perspective, that's more natural gas than every gas-fired power plant in Washington combined. It's more natural gas than every homeowner uses, residential homeowner uses in Washington combined. This is a new, pinpoint on the map of gas consumption in Washington. It's a staggering amount. You bring it in, refine it into methanol, and then the methanol would actually get shipped overseas to China, be refined a little bit more into a product called olefins, and then that is a feedstock into plastics. So it's all about getting more, allowing China to make more, plastics, which again doesn't fit into that sort of "Citizens for a Green Economy" marketing that they're selling to us, but it sure sounds good. Methanol can also be used as a fuel, but that's not the end use of this methanol. This methanol, according to Northwest Innovation Works, is is going to be turned into plastics or used in the feedstocks for plastics.
Now, when this plant proposal was first made, was it clear that this was the end result of the methanol that would be refined in the Klamath plant? Or was it kind of left to let people think, oh, this is just another source of potential fuel that we can be using domestically?
No, this was always an export for plastics production.
And why would methanol be considered a green substance in their eyes?
I think a lot of it has to do with where you get methanol or how you can make methanol. You can make, or in the plastics production, you can use, you can use oil as a feedstock for olefins, which is the what the methanol would be refined into as the feedstock for plastic. You can use coal, or you can use, some form of renewables. Coal, oil, natural gas, none of those are renewable. So what Northwest Innovation Works is just trying to do is they've found a place, the Pacific Northwest, where natural gas is relatively inexpensive and fresh water is abundant, and they're able to, make a profit by making the methanol here and shipping it to China, where natural gas is very expensive, and fresh water is in limited supply. So the company has found a way to make a profit at the expense of folks here in the Pacific Northwest.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning about the proposed gargantuan methanol refinery for Klamath, Washington, which is what, about 45 miles north of Portland along I-5 in the Columbia River. And I'm talking with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey, who's a senior organizer with Columbia Riverkeeper, and Gary Wallace, who's a community activist who's lived in Klamath most of his life. It's interesting to when you're saying there's very little clean water in China. I was just reading today about the incredible, horrible air alerts they've been having like throughout most of December, and I guess yesterday morning the Chinese in Beijing and several other cities around the country woke up to some of the worst air they've ever witnessed, and yet there wasn't even a red alert for it, I guess. And some people were saying because the Chinese government didn't want to acknowledge that they were starting off the new year with a horrible air pollution. I'm wondering if this factors in at all, that China is looking to outsource some of its pollution now, as well as trying to get cheap natural gas.
I believe you hit it right on the head. I'm one of these people. I'm educated as a political scientist, and I watch communist Chinese news on the satellite TV, and it's for English dissemination, but it's very true. The people of China have told their own communist government, say, I've had enough. So the communist Chinese government is meeting their air pollution international look at me, I'm looking good standards by reduction according to their domestic consumption. But the reality is they're taking their old coal-fired technology plants and sending them to third world developing countries that the Chinese are into, and they're selling them their dirty coal to run their old technology coal plants. So they look good, and that's the same thing I believe in my mind, and I think a bunch of local folks here do. The Chinese have found an open, clean airshed that says, oh, we can pollute up to a certain level, according to Southwest Washington Air Pollution Control Authority, even though it might not be healthy. There's an open airshed with clean water, and these people are looking for jobs. Well, as an international scientist, I look at it as very poor for us on a national security basis, one thing. The other thing is you're allowing the Chinese to put in something that is very dangerous in an area that has no history of anything like this. And I think the Chinese, and I'm going to use the word bribery here, because the NWIW representatives are spreading money around in mass throughout the small community of Klamath, the school board and the public library system, giving money to the port ahead of time without signing contracts or getting permits. That kinds of things. So they're also doing that in Cowlitz County, and they're proposing a training program for 40 people out of the 190 jobs, 40 local folks that have to go through a specialized training program that LCC, the local community college here, Lower Columbia College in Longview, would set up in collusion with NWIW and touted as a new apprentice-type program. But when they come and say they're going to provide local jobs, but they're only going to train 40 people out of thousands of applicants, that tells me out of their proposed 190 jobs, I think 150 are not going to be local. And they're going to be super expensive, well-paid people with petroleum engineering degrees. I think the Chinese have left their engineers in Tacoma and are going to plan on bringing them down. And that's why their regional area to draw employees from includes the Tacoma, Seattle area.
But Gary, I just want to pick a little nit in terms of language, because you keep referring to the Chinese communist government. But I think that communists, they're communist in probably name only, and probably would make Karl Marx turn over in his grave, because I think that they have come up with a very new form of capitalism.
State-controlled
capitalism, which is very frightening. It's probably even more frightening than Adam Smith capitalism.
True, but it's their brand, and their way of doing business internationally has always been grease the skids. It's just the way the world works, and the Chinese are proponents of getting their way because they'll throw out their yuan no matter how many it takes.
Well, we're talking about the emissions, and you mentioned the Southwest Washington Clean Air Authority. There is a hearing coming up on Wednesday, and I wonder if we can talk about what's going to be heard at the hearing, and what chances are that the emissions, the actual emissions that would be put out by this refinery, might actually be in violation of the Clean Air Act and other Washington clean air laws?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Jasmine would be better to answer that. She's sure. Much more up to speed. I'm the local.
Okay, well, now Jasmine for the meta picture.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, to put the Klamath Methanol Refinery into perspective, it would be the largest source of air pollution in Kalama, and by no small margin. There's an existing facility in Kalama called Emerald Kalama Chemicals, and they released, you know, according to EPA, 6 tons of toxic and hazardous pollution in 2015. What the Kalama Methanol Refinery plans to emit is 53 tons of toxic and hazardous pollution into the air every year. So you're going, the current number one emitter of air pollution is 6 tons a year, and Northwest Innovation Works with their Kalama Methanol Refinery would jump that up to 53 tons a year. That's a huge, you know, that wins by a significant margin in terms of air pollution. And again, you know, folks come to Kalama because there's this amazing quality of life. There's an amazing, you know, fishing community. There's an amazing, you know, recreation community. The most gorgeous views of the Columbia River are found in Kalama, and this facility, you know, puts all of that at risk. So the public hearing on the proposed, you know, air pollution permit is Wednesday, January 4th. So today's Monday, and so this would be Wednesday, and it's up in Longview, Washington, at the Public Utility District Auditorium, and the hearing runs from 4 to 8 p.m., and public testimony is accepted from 6 to 8. So if folks want to come and give public testimony, I encourage them to show up closer to 4 o'clock to make sure you get signed in, and then stay until the end. And there are carpools being arranged from Portland. And so folks can contact me, and maybe you can link to my contact information on the show's website, so that we can hook you up with a ride.
I think we have that information already up, but I'll double check when I get back.
Great.
And actually, I'll make a specific link on the website for Locus Focus that how to get to the meeting on Wednesday. And in fact, I want to thank Don Stunke from Vancouver, who sends me frequent emails along with probably most other people in the Northwest. And he's given some very detailed directions on how to get there and some other information. The general rule of thumb for dresses, if you are coming to oppose any fossil fuel development in the Northwest, you wear red. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, correct. Absolutely.
And the proponents will be wearing blue, and it's an interesting experience to walk into these halls and you see,
yeah,
we see about 90% red and 10% blue, just about every hearing that I've been at. The other thing that I think I heard from Don was that they're expecting, or they're concerned, that Northwest Innovation Works is going to pack the meeting. I wonder if you've heard about that, if that's just paranoia.
In our experience, we've had multiple dealings with the opposite side that are mostly labor union members or blue-collar construction worker types, and they're looking at their jobs and their own personal well-being. But when they get up to speak, and we do look at the numbers, it's always been they try and get there first, and they try and be a little bit intimidating because they're guys in that field. But when you look at the numbers, the true numbers, the community steps up, and we're across multi-generations. It isn't just young people, old people, or people that are screaming, I'm a liberal environmentalist tree hugger. That's not it. We have multiple people. Politics is not what this is about. This is about our quality of life. So it's really nice to see that the supporters of these types of petroleum programs have their interests, but their interests aren't broad enough, and the communities are showing up in bigger numbers all the time. It's just getting the word out, and so that's what we hope your program is doing for.
Well, I hope so too. And what I guess my sense is that people should get there early. I mean, I think that's what Don was saying, basically, that you get there probably no later than 4 o'clock. And so if you're leaving from Portland, you may want to think about leaving about 2:30 in the afternoon.
Correct.
We're going to be hitting the beginning of rush hour getting up into Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. And dressing warm, because it's getting cold in the evenings, and Longview is definitely going to be down into the teens. The hearing room itself holds about 250 people, mm-hmm. So that's another reason to get there early and save your seat.
Actually, I was running down my own memory lane yesterday, thinking about the hearing for, I guess it was the Port Commission hearing for the Vancouver energy proposal to build the continent's largest oil by trail terminal in Vancouver, and that hearing was just about a year ago, and it was snowing and it was really cold, and I thought, it's interesting that these hearings in January always seem to pick the best day of the year to do it. So mm-hmm. Yeah, dress warm, and there won't be snowing, I don't think, so at least the roads will be clear this time around.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a reception, I saw, from 4 to 5, an open house. I'm wondering what that is.
Yeah, so that'll be a chance for the Southwest Clean Air Authority to probably on poster boards throughout the room have some of the key points about the hearing, about the draft permit. So there'll be a chance for people to speak one-on-one with the folks at the Southwest Clean Air Authority who drafted the permit. For people who are new to these hearings, or for people who've been to a lot of them, it's also a great time for you to just come and catch up. It's a good social time for people who haven't, you know, seen their friends or seen people since the last big hearing.
It's a whole new social life, isn't it? Going to hearings.
Yeah. Well, we've had so many that they turn into, you know, kind of reunions for people who spend so much of their time and energy working on these projects. Especially for folks in Southwest Washington who are becoming this incredibly tight-knit community because they've been helping each other so much over the past few years.
Yes, and it runs from Vancouver all the way up to Longview at this point.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And do the people from Tacoma ever come down just to give you moral support?
They have come down, yeah, especially right after their big victory when Northwest Innovation Works just decided to leave. You know, really all of a sudden there was no indication that Northwest Innovation Works was going to just quit their project in Tacoma. They had so many opportunities to actually answer questions, provide information, respond to elected officials, and everyone was waiting for them to do that. And instead of doing it, they just one day announced that they were abandoning their project. So folks in Tacoma, you know, while they were, you know, celebrating, they were also sort of left shocked. And so they did come down and help a little bit in the first, you know, few months of the campaign in Kalama.
It kind of reminds me of the people, the kayaktivists from Seattle, who were trying to stop the Fenica when it was leaving port. Actually, it was a polar, the big oil rig that was going up to the Arctic, and that they. So the activists who tried to stop that from heading out of the port of Seattle then came down to Portland to help and actually in some ways do a lot of training of how to be a kayaktivist in the Willamette River to stop the Fenica, the icebreaker, from leaving port after it had been dragged in here. So it's nice to see activists like sharing their skills, which I think is something we're going to have to be doing a lot of in the next few years.
Agreed.
Right. I mean, and I think that, you know, it's critical because, you know, a company like Northwest Innovation Works with their Kalama methanol refinery, you know, they can come in and drop, you know, $1 million, you know, in advertising alone, you know, over the course of like a year. And to them, it's, you know, that's not an impact. But so we have to fight that with lots and lots of bodies. I'm reminded of we did a big rally a couple months ago in Kalama, and, it was amazing. I mean, there were probably, you know, 130 people in downtown Kalama in red shirts rallying against the proposal. And just a few days before the rally that we were planning, Northwest Innovation Works announced that they, too, were hosting an event. And it would be a barbecue with a raffle of kayaks and other big toys and a bouncy castle for kids. So... they're able to really spend a lot of money as a way to, you know, persuade or change public opinion. And so we certainly need all the help we can get to help fight that.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about the proposed methanol refinery in Kalama, Washington, just north of here, and opposition, a very strong community opposition to it. And my guests are Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey with Columbia Riverkeeper and Gary Wallace, who is a local organizer out of Kalama. And in the remaining moments, one of the things we should probably talk about is how that gas is going to get to the refinery. Mm-hmm. And what is being proposed now and what you're fearing might actually be the upshot.
Right. So 320 million cubic feet a day of gas is no small amount. And right now, the Northwest, we get our gas from, you know, fracking fields in northern British Columbia or sort of the Rockies, you know, over in Colorado. And, you know, if you look at the existing pipeline infrastructure that we have in the Pacific Northwest and what Northwest Innovation Works wants to build, not only in Kalama, but also if they pursue their project in Port Westward for a methanol refinery of equal size. So we'll have two projects tied for largest in the world, of course, unless we stop them. And there simply isn't enough gas in our existing pipeline infrastructure to make, you know, to fuel both of these projects, you know, probably even to fuel one of these projects. So we're looking at new, you know, gas companies, pipeline companies are looking at, you know, this Kalama methanol refinery as, you know, their anchor tenant, as their, you know, their stake in the game to build more pipeline infrastructure and not, you know, small pipeline infrastructure, but infrastructure that locks our entire region into gas consumption, you know, for 50, 60, 70 years. So we actually never make that transition to green, clean energy. We just transition to fracked natural gas, which we all know is not the bridge fuel that it was sold to us, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Actually, I just want to interject for a second because some people still might think that, well, natural gas is so much cleaner than coal. But let's just, like, spend a minute or so debunking that one.
Sure. So, you know, there's been a number of studies that have been coming out recently about, you know, this, which is worse, gas or coal. And increasingly what the studies are saying is they're actually about the same. The difference being, you know, coal emissions, you know, happen at the smokestack. So that's where you get the targeted pollution, greenhouse gas pollution. Whereas with natural gas, there are methane leaks throughout the entire pipeline extraction system. So methane being, you know, the most potent greenhouse gas, you know, leaks out of pipelines, it leaks out of the extraction well, it would leak out of, you know, the facility in Kalama, and, you know, cumulatively, all of those methane leaks, you know, can be worse, the same or worse as a massive coal-fired power plant. So you don't see the impact all in one place. You see the impact, you know, throughout the entire, you know, transportation extraction you know, system. But as we all know, you know, there can be coal-fired power plants in China or gas plants in the Gulf Coast, and it doesn't matter where the greenhouse gas emissions, you know, occur. We're going to see the impacts in the Pacific Northwest. So, you know, at one point we were able to maybe just say, oh, that's their problem over there. That's not the case now. We all understand how climate change affects the entire world. And so one region's decision to do, you know, to proceed with a dangerous, dirty project impacts the entire world. And that's, you know, that's what we're seeing in Kalama.
Well, another concern also seems to be that these pipelines that are going to have to be built that you were talking about, one of them at least, or maybe two of them, are resuscitating old projects. There was the infamous Palomar pipeline that was going to cross the Mount Hood National Forest on its way to the Columbia River Estuary for the LNG facility that was basically put to rest, buried finally last spring. Mm-hmm. And so with it went the Palomar pipeline, which had been contested hotly, not just that was one thing that brought the LNG fight, not just from being a local fight in Clatsop County to being a fight across the state of Oregon. I'm wondering, is this the same pipeline route that would be resuscitated? And would this, again, generate the same kind of concerns of landowners whose property the pipeline would cross?
Right. So, yeah, if you recall, we've had a couple of, the Columbia River is no stranger to massive gas export proposals. We've had the Bradwood LNG export terminal, which died in about 2009, and most recently Oregon LNG went down last spring. And both of those projects, just like what we're starting to see with methanol refining, you know, needed additional pipeline infrastructure. And so there were two proposed pipelines on the table to feed those LNG export terminals. One was the Palomar pipeline across Mount Hood, which met fierce opposition, you know, from a lot of folks in the urban, you know, Portland area who love Mount Hood. And we have great allies with the organization BARC in fighting that project. And when the Bradwood LNG terminal filed for bankruptcy, that project went away. The second pipeline infrastructure that we saw disappear was the Washington expansion project, and this was a proposed, basically like double track of the existing Williams Northwest pipeline, which runs along the I-5 corridor, and they were going to just basically double track that so that Oregon LNG in Warrington could have a steady gas supply. And when Oregon LNG was, you know, facing major hurdles, that project went away as well. And so we've seen you know, big pipeline projects with their respective natural gas export terminals. You know, we've seen this before, and I think we'll see it again. We'll see a resurgence of a Palomar pipeline or a Williams expansion, of course, with new names and probably some new marketing right. to help accommodate, you know, this new methanol industry that wants to come to the Pacific Northwest.
You're going to add something, Gary?
Well, I was going to say the one thing that the 800-pound gorilla in the room is eminent domain. And that's what this project has one of the pipeline corporations already using eminent domain to utilize private property ownership private property owners' land, as well as go through a historic pioneer cemetery in our county. And it's really finding out that a pipeline has so much power and disregard for not only the environment but for individual property holders and property rights. That's part of the objection to this project as well. And that's probably going to be a huge objection to the continuing advancement and expansion of any type of a petroleum gas line situation. It's time we turn the corner on that. We're smarter.
Well, that's what killed Jordan Cove, even though I guess the company is trying one more time to get FERC to change their mind for the third time.
Yeah, don't do it.
Yeah. One of the reasons why I think that Jordan Cove thought they could go back to FERC again is because now there's going to be a new president who could maybe appoint different people to FERC and there'd be a difference. I'm wondering if you see with the impending Trump administration, if the landscape is going to change or if we have enough in place to basically hold the thin green line, even despite Trump being president.
Well, in my opinion, I do see the new president-elect is a potential problem, particularly when he's indicating who he's putting in charge of the EPA, et cetera. But at the same time, it might be ironically the thing that makes the thin green line become a very, very big, broad, don't cross my path, don't tread on me type of a bigger green line. I think people are going to come to the realization that their quality of life, their health, their children's health, what we want to pass along as our legacy to the future generations and a few jobs.
And what's your thoughts, Jasmine?
And I hope that's what we grow up as a better caring species here. But our new president definitely is empowering and emboldening people to hold on to everything they can and come out, they think, on their advantage. But I believe it's going to be a turnaround. I think the society is going to say, wait, that's not where we want to go. That's the old way. We left that behind a long time ago.
And your thoughts, Jasmine?
Yeah, I think that we're going to need to really dig down deep here in the Pacific Northwest and remember the victories that we've had against these massive fossil fuel proposals,
yes,
whether there be coal, LNG, oil, propane export, and remember that there was a time when all of those fights individually felt impossible, that victory was just, you know, beyond imaginable. And we're going to have to remember that time and then remember how we got to victory, because we did every single time. And the sooner that we can stop these projects, the better, because I think that, you know, we're facing an uncertain 4 years where, you know, we're going to have much support, you know, from our friends in Washington. But we also need to remember that that folks in Washington didn't kill, you know, Bradwood LNG or Oregon LNG or Jordan Cove or, you know, Pembina propane export or Waterside oil refinery or, you know, the Gateway Pacific Coal Export Terminal. It was never, you know, those weren't people in Washington. Those were decisions that local folks impacted. Those were decisions that we made happen at the local level. We're going to need to hold on to those local decisions and make sure that every local decision in these projects goes our way. And we have a track record of doing that. So we'll just need to make sure that that's what we focus on in the next 4 years.
So to get to that, let's one more time about the hearing on Wednesday.
Yeah, so it's Wednesday, January 4th from 4 to 8 p.m. at the Cowlitz Public Utility District Office up in Longview, Washington. If you would like to give testimony, please show up at 4, because it's going to be a small room, and public testimony is running from 6 to 8 p.m., and there's talking points for folks who aren't as familiar with the issue and want to, you know, have a couple things to say on the ColumbiaRiverKeeper.org website.
And we'll have a link to that on our show. And the address for the Cowlitz County PUD is 961 12th Avenue in Longview, and I'll put that on the website as well. I want to thank you guys very much for joining us. It was good to talk about this and a great way to start the year in struggle.
Thank you very much. Sure. I hope we have success. We must prevail.
And I'll see you on Wednesday. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
We've been talking with Jasmine Zimmer Stuckey, senior organizer with Columbia Riverkeeper, and Gary Wallace, who's an activist in Kalama, Washington, fighting to stop the largest methanol refinery in the world from being built there. And you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. That's again, kboo.fm/locus-focus. Next week, we're going to talk with Gretchen Bakke, author of The Grid, The Fraying Wires Between Americans and Our Energy Future. My engineer is Terrell Lowry. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Jim Pepper and let you know that coming up on 11 o'clock here on KBOO, it's Health Watch with Dr. David Naiman and 8 Steps to Reset Your Hormones and Repair Your Metabolism and Restore Fertility. And at 11:30, it's Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Thanks for listening. Thank you.